For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hello and welcome to episode number 56 of the Draft Analyst, presented by the Believe Sports Podcast Network. Do you believe? I'm Chris Tripodi of DraftAnalyst.com, and with me, as always, is Tony Pauline. And Tony, the 2019 NFL Draft is now complete. As usual, there were plenty of surprises in each and every round. And Tony, it's just another draft in the books.
That's all it is. I mean, it's names on a piece of paper, or you put all that work in. Scouts do a ton of work for me. I start in May, so it's almost a year-long process. You rate the players, you grade them, you do your reports. And, you know, people need to remember, this is not the end. This is just the beginning. It'll start in minicamp, and then we'll go through the season. Hopefully, we'll chart these players to see how they do. So, you know, it was interesting. We had a few surprises in this year's draft, as there's always surprises. A few highly rated players still left on the board, and plenty to talk about.
Absolutely, and this podcast certainly is going to be a little longer than our usual half hour or so with so much to talk about. Quite possibly might be longer than that hour-long first-round breakdown we did the other day, because we're going to go through every day two and day three selection in groups of 10 or so and discuss some of the more notable picks. Call it a megacast if you must, but first, before we get to the picks, we're going to discuss the two big issues that really gobbled up the headlines on Friday. Number one being the rift that developed in the front office of the New York Jets between general manager Mike Maccagnan and head coach Adam Gase. Now, we first broke the news of the rift between the two on our podcast Friday morning that broke down round one. Tony had heard that the rift had its origins at the start of free agency. Gase was annoyed that Maccagnan wasn't signing certain players, and it's really only grown from there. A few hours after we released our podcast, former NFL executive Mike Lombardi, who now writes for The Athletic, posted a tweet affirming the dysfunction here. Lombardi's tweet read, "I hear that all is not well in New York Jets land about their scouting operation. General manager Mike Maccagnan is on the hot seat internally, and many in the league expect changes in the Jets front office after the draft. Stay tuned." Now, Maccagnan addressed this reported rift and said the following, "I think Adam and I have worked very well together. I'm sure, like in any process, there are times when we have different opinions on a player. From my standpoint, I've actually had a very good working relationship with Adam. Quite frankly, he has a very good sense of humor, makes me laugh quite a bit, which is one of the things I really like about working with him." Tony, are you standing by our report from Friday?
Absolutely, Chris. In fact, I'm going to double down on it. After our report went viral, I received multiple calls, unsolicited, I'm going to add, by good sources, not only confirming the story about the rift that had developed, but offering additional details. As I stated yesterday, this was an issue I was alerted to during the second week of March when free agency began, and continued to hear about it throughout the lead up to the draft, including up to the morning of the first round. What I was told the morning of the draft really raised red flags and caused me to dig deeper. Now, while many are focusing on one soundbite, remember what I said was, in its completeness, that there was a meeting of the minds the week before the draft when Maccagnan and Gase tried to iron out their differences. Whether that holds true in the long term remains to be seen.
Now, what's the big issue between the two as it's been told to you?
The big issue, as has been told to me by a number of sources, and a number of sources means a half dozen or more, is Adam Gase is not happy about being unable to call the shots, and he does not have the control that he wants.
Now, in the Jets statement about this, which says a lot that the team is even going to the lengths that they did to address it, quote, the Jets denied there was any rift and said that any disagreements were the usual ones that coaches and the front office regularly have, and that's from New York Post writer Brian Costello. Tony, what's your take on that?
I absolutely agree with that. I mean, there are disagreements which regularly take place between general managers and coaches, and even scouts and general managers. I know of stories from the past where directors of college scouting had to be held back from physically going after general managers in war rooms because of words that have been said. It gets very intense, and you know, people put a lot of hours into it, 60 hours plus per week, and they want to be heard. Now, what's bothersome about the McCagnan-Gase situation is Gase was just hired as the head coach, and this is taking place just a few months into his tenure. And the fact is Adam Gase was the third choice to be the head coach of the New York Jets. They wanted Matt Rhule, but Rhule wanted to hire his own assistant coaches, so he didn't take the job. They kicked the tires on Mike McCarthy, who wanted the job, but it was the same situation. McCarthy wanted to bring in his own guys. And the Jets' default was finally to go to Gase because he agreed to let them bring Greg Williams in as their defensive coordinator. Now you have a situation where Gase, who's only been on the job for barely 3 months, has openly complained to people about not getting his way and not having the control, and this has caused problems. The fact is Gase had a lot of control in Miami and did not work out well for Gase or the Dolphins.
Sounds like it's going great for the Jets so far here. Tony, what's your take on Michael Lombardi's tweet, and have you heard anything similar?
I heard something almost exactly similar the morning of the draft's first day. That's what sent up red flags. After reading Lombardi's tweet, I called the source who told me something similar the day before to see if he had passed that information on to Lombardi, and the answer was an emphatic no, which tells me the word's been circulating around the league. I think it's a difficult situation for McCagnan. I respect the guy's worth ethic. He's always at scouting events such as the Shrine Game or NFLPA game doing his homework, which is not the norm for general managers. You know, on the last night of Senior Bowl practices, when everyone has left Mobile, Alabama, we see Mike in town doing last-minute interviews. I wish it had worked out for McCagnan, and I hope it still does. But, you know, it's a game of win and losses, and so far the record has not been good.
Now, do you think all of the blame for this situation and everything leading up to it falls on McCagnan?
Absolutely not. He definitely deserves his share of the blame. But let's look at the history of the Jets. I mean, they fire Mike Tannenbaum, and then they hire a firm to hire a new general manager. After multiple candidates turned down the Jets job, they finally hire John Idzik with the restriction that Idzik must keep Rex Ryan as the head coach. Idzik's tenure with the Jets, especially his draft record, was a disaster. I mean, it rivaled what went on when Rich Kotite was in charge. They then fire Idzik and Rex Ryan. They hire a coach in Todd Bowles, and then they bring Mike McCagnan in. It seems that they do everything backwards. Now you have a general manager on the hot seat even before the draft has been completed, or reportedly on the hot seat before the draft has been completed, and that's the word at, and you've already hired a brand new coaching staff. So, you know, it just seems that things are done in reverse.
Now, this is obviously a story I'm sure we haven't heard the last of here. We also probably haven't heard the last of the Josh Rosen saga. During our draft day podcast Thursday morning, Tony, you mentioned that the Miami Dolphins were a sleeper team who was interested in Rosen. The way the first round played out, it seems at one point that they were close to the last team standing, with both the Giants and the Redskins both drafting quarterbacks in round one. Rumors had the Chargers involved as well. We finally got resolution on the Rosen situation on Friday, with Arizona shipping Rosen to Miami for the 62nd overall pick. Now, it's hard to view this as anything but a steal for the Dolphins and a disaster for the Cardinals. Miami gets a player many, including us, rated as the top quarterback in last year's draft at a steep discount, both pick-wise and contract-wise, after he dealt with last year's disaster in the desert. Arizona, in the end, traded picks 15, 79, and 152 last year to get Josh Rosen. He didn't keep them out of the top pick. They got pick 62 for him in return, and they drafted Kyler Murray, obviously, this year. So if you look at that as a whole, it's two first-round picks, number 1 and number 15, a third-round pick and a fifth-round pick, all to end up with Kyler Murray and a late second rounder this year. Not great.
It's not. And it's kind of funny because, you were right on about the Miami Dolphins getting a steal on Josh Rosen. And it kind of reminds me of what happened with Dan Marino. As Dan Marino continued to tumble, you know, there was obviously no leverage on his part, but he eventually became great value for the Miami Dolphins. And even more ironic is everyone talks about the great quarterback draft of 1983. Three of those quarterbacks, Marino, Kelly, and Kenny O'Brien, ended up in the AFC East. We talked about the great quarterback draft of last year. And guess what? Three of those quarterbacks, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, and now Josh Rosen, are all going to be playing in the AFC East. So things have a way of, you know, coming full circle. Yeah, I think the Cardinals basically were in a pickle of their own doing. I mean, this is, you know, as I've said in multiple interviews and on our podcast, this basically started with the hiring of Cliff Kingsbury. And it's kind of, on the paper or on face value, it's gone downhill since then, with Cliff Kingsbury saying, you know, he wanted Kyler Murray. They get Kyler Murray, and then they're basically almost stuck with Josh Rosen, and they got to have a fire sale to give him away, a guy who potentially is a very good quarterback. And to his credit, Josh Rosen has been first rate throughout this whole thing. You know, I said on a number of podcasts and interviews, Josh Rosen was like, I don't care where I'm playing next year. I want to play. And he was very above it all. We've talked about his personality in the past, how it rubbed some people wrong way. Well, the guy was first rate throughout this. So I think if you're a Miami Dolphin fan, you got to be ecstatic. The Dolphins kept talking about targeting Tua Tagovailoa in 2020. As we said, the morning of the first round of the draft, the Dolphins were the sleeper team to end up with Josh Rosen. They did. You know, it looks like they not only got their quarterback of the future, they got their quarterback for 2019. And if they protect him, the Dolphins will look back, the Dolphins organization will look back on this almost as fondly as they look back selecting Dan Marino in 1983.
I like it. And now it's time to break down the actual draft picks from Friday and Saturday. Day two started with cornerback Byron Murphy going to the Cardinals at number 33. Number 34 was Rock Ya-Sin, cornerback out of Temple, going to the Colts. Number 35, Juwan Taylor out of Florida to Jacksonville. Deebo Samuel, the receiver from South Carolina, went to San Fran at number 36. At 37, the Carolina Panthers selected Greg Little, offensive tackle out of Mississippi. Cody Ford out of Oklahoma went next to Buffalo. Then Tampa Bay selected Sean Bunting, cornerback out of Central Michigan. Trayvon Mullen, the Clemson corner, went to Oakland with the eighth pick of the second round. And then Denver had two consecutive picks, Dalton Risner, offensive lineman out of Kansas State, and Drew Locke, the quarterback out of Missouri. For me, I really like Deebo Samuel's fit in San Francisco. He was easily the best receiver at this year's Senior Bowl, separates with ease, runs very good routes, excellent athlete. Both him and Dante Pettis there can play both inside and outside, which gives Kyle Shanahan and Jimmy Garoppolo a lot of options on offense. We've talked a lot on this podcast about both Dalton Risner and Drew Locke. Both end up with the Broncos. Denver actually traded up for Locke to get him at pick 42. Risner's not going to be asked to play left tackle, should end up at right guard and make an immediate impact inside for Denver. And everybody thought Locke to the Broncos at number 10 was an option. Instead, he goes to them at number 10 in the second round. Even though we've had our issues with Drew Locke as far as his consistency, how he's played against good teams, this is still solid value for Denver. He's got plenty of upside for this pick slot, and as the team's third selection, considering they already made a second round pick as well, the risk here somewhat mitigated. Tony, what stands out to you in this group of picks?
Well, first, let's start off with Juwan Taylor, who goes to the Jacksonville Jaguars. You know, if you listen to this podcast, we said 2 weeks before the draft, Juwan Taylor, who was projected as a top 10 pick, had medical red flags thrown up on him, and he was going to drop, and he dropped into the second round. I mean, this has Miles Jack written all over it, because if you remember, Miles Jack was graded as a top potential 5 pick, had knee issues, fell into the second round. Jacksonville scooped him up. They got themselves a great player. If Juwan Taylor keeps his weight down and the knee issues are not prevalent, I think the Jacksonville Jaguars could potentially have their starting right tackle for a long time to come. Buffalo Bills taking Cody Ford. There was word that the Bills were looking to trade up in round one to get Cody Ford, just like there was word that the Bills were looking to trade up and get Ed Oliver. They didn't have to trade up to get Ed Oliver. He fell to them in the first round. They didn't have to trade up to get Cody Ford. He fell to them in the second round. terrific pick for the value pick for the Bills. They need help all over their offensive line. They can slot him at right tackle. They can slot him at a guard. I think it's an outstanding selection for the Bills, as was the next one, Sean Bunting, going to Tampa Bay, a big press cornerback. Again, we had said on this podcast that he was one of the fastest rising cornerbacks in the draft. I think he was the fourth cornerback off the board. Great fit for the Tampa Bay system. Todd Bowles is going to love him there. He's got great upside. He's a guy who I expect to play often as a rookie. He's got tremendous upside down the road.
Now we'll move on to the next 10 picks here of the second round. Detroit, with the 11th pick, 43 overall, went with Jelani Tavai, linebacker out of Hawaii, a guy many got familiar with as a late riser here in the process over the past week or so. Elton Jenkins, the center out of Mississippi State, went to Green Bay with the next pick. The New England Patriots took Joan Williams, cornerback out of Vanderbilt. Cleveland traded up to pick up Greedy Williams, LSU cornerback. Seattle then chose Marquise Blair, safety out of Utah. New Orleans went with Eric McCoy, the center out of Texas A&M. The 17th pick in the second round was Ben Benogu, edge rusher out of TCU to the Indianapolis Colts. Minnesota went with Alabama tight end Irv Smith to follow that up. A.J. Brown, the receiver out of Ole Miss, went 19th in the second round to Tennessee. And Drew Sample, tight end out of Washington, a guy we really raved about at the Senior Bowl, went to Cincinnati with the 20th pick of the round. Obviously, Greedy Williams slipped big time here. Teams had some concerns, which we alluded to a couple podcasts ago, after initially really not buying into the lack of official visits of Greedy Williams being an issue. But Cleveland does a really nice job here trading up to kind of shore up their secondary with a potential difference-making corner. Irv Smith going to Minnesota really seems to spell the end of Kyle Rudolph, whether it's before this season or when he hits free agency in 2020. Kirk Cousins is a guy who's historically leaned on his tight ends, but not really Rudolph last year. A lot of that might be having Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen on the outside, but Irv Smith should also be a better fit for what Cousins likes to do, more in the mold of a Jordan Reed, who Cousins played with in Washington. And the Titans grabbing A.J. Brown here is really good value. We had him graded on the 1-2 turn as far as rounds go. Corey Davis really hasn't become the dominating player many expected. Adam Humphries signed a nice deal. He's mainly a slot player, which means Browns is going to see a lot of time on the outside. Many thought his best fit was as a big slot, but this is a good athlete with excellent skills as a receiver. He was very productive at Ole Miss. Should just add another weapon for Marcus Mariota, who's really in a make-or-break season right now in Tennessee.
Yeah, I like Elton Jenkins with the Packers taking him in the 12th pick of round two. The Packers had considered taking Jenkins, or they had him graded near the first round during Senior Bowl time. I had heard that throughout the week we were there in Mobile, Alabama, that they were considering taking him late in round one. If you remember, there was talk right before the draft about Jenkins getting first round talk. I'm sure that was about with the Packers. I could not pin it down, but I'm sure that's who it was, because they liked him in first round. They get a guy that can play center. They get a guy that can play guard. They get a guy that I think is going to do very well. Joan Williams, the big cornerback from Vanderbilt, going to New England. New England does a great job with their corners, with their defensive backs, period. They play him all over the field. Williams doesn't have the deep speed, but I think in that Bill Belichick defense, he's going to flourish. Ben Benogu going with the 17th pick of round two to the Indianapolis Colts. Here's a bit of a story. I put out on Twitter yesterday that the Jets were looking to move up into the top of round two. They had talked to the Indianapolis Colts about getting that 34th pick back, because that's one of the picks that they traded last year to move up, or the Seattle Seahawks. And it was the Jets who wanted Benogu. They could not pull a trade off with either team. The Colts come away with Benogu with the 17th pick. It gives them the edge rusher that they want, a guy that can stand over a tackle, a guy that can come out of a three-point stance. I think the Colts got a winner here. And a guy, again, that we mentioned on this podcast, I wrote an article about it the Monday before the draft. This was a guy who a lot of people thought was going to be selected much earlier than was being initially projected, and he turned out to be a top 50 pick rather than a top 60 pick.
Now, we'll finish out the second round here with the final 12 picks. Philadelphia took Penn State running back Miles Sanders with the 21st pick in the round. Houston went back-to-back here with Lonnie Johnson, Kentucky cornerback, and Max Sharping, the tackle from Northern Illinois. Mecole Hardman, the receiver from Georgia, went to Kansas City, who obviously is dealing with the whole Tyreek Hill situation. Hardman, at the very least, gives them a similar speedster. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, out of Stanford, the wide receiver, went next to Philadelphia. Dallas took UCF defensive tackle Tristan Hill. Indianapolis went with Ohio State wide receiver Paris Campbell. The Chargers took Nasir Adderley, the safety out of Delaware. Los Angeles Rams went with Taylor Rapp, safety out of Washington. UMass wide receiver Andy Isabella went next to the Arizona Cardinals with the pick they acquired for Josh Rosen. Juan Thornhill, the safety out of Virginia, went to Kansas City with the 31st pick in the second round. And the final pick of the second round, Seattle traded up with New England to select A.J. Brown's teammate, D.K. Metcalf, fellow receiver out of Old Miss. Now, Miles Sanders really lands in a nice spot here in Philly. He's a better runner and overall player than Jordan Howard, who they traded for earlier in the offseason. He's a bit raw after starting one season after Saquon Barkley left Penn State, but he has a feature back skill set and really landed in a spot where he could produce immediately with a good team that's going to surround him and make him effective. Lonnie Johnson fills the need at corner for the Texans that we've discussed several times on the podcast. He's long, he's athletic, really impressed during Senior Bowl week. So I like what I've seen out of Lonnie Johnson, and I think he's going to do well with the Texans. And we do have to mention DK Metcalf here with the last pick in the second round. Even after his combine, we tried to splash some cold water on the first-round talk for Metcalf. This is actually a nice spot for him to succeed. Obviously, with Russell Wilson there to stay after his recent extension, he has the arm to utilize Metcalf down the field. David Moore was an unknown before last season. He produced in a role similar to the one that Metcalf projects to thrive in Seattle here. So I see no reason why Metcalf can't, at the very least, be a legitimate big play threat in the Pacific Northwest. Just don't expect him to run the whole route tree.
First pick I'm going to talk about as the second round closed out is Tristan Hill, selected by the Dallas Cowboys with the 26th pick of the second round. I'm going to talk about it because I predicted it. If you read the article about players who were going to go much higher than people were predicting, I spoke about Tristan Hill, and I said, watch out for the Cowboys because he's a perfect fit for Rod Marinelli's defense. That's exactly what happened. Then we're going to talk about Andy Isabella with the Arizona Cardinals because, again, that's something that we talked about actually during Pro Day month about how much the Arizona Cardinals loved Andy Isabella, how much they thought Cliff Kingsbury thought he would be a great fit for the system, which he is. And this was the pick that the Cardinals received from the Miami Dolphins because Miami had the leverage. They kept trading down, getting extra selections before they moved this pick to the Arizona Cardinals. I guarantee you the Cardinals made this move to get this pick because they wanted to take Andy Isabella because they see the Kansas City Chiefs sitting right there with the 31st pick around two, and they figure the Chiefs are going to take Andy Isabella with the Tyreek Hill situation. So they grabbed him. Isabella is a terrific player. We've talked about him oftentimes on this podcast. I spoke about him back in October on the Journey to the Draft podcast. I think he's going to do a good job in that system as a slot receiver on the outside, as a return specialist. I would expect him to run reverses on occasion. And then after that, the Chiefs took Juan Thornhill, which I thought was great value. I mean, I was wrong on Juan Thornhill. I was told that he was the fastest rising safety undraft boards, could be a potential 8-round pick. He ended up going a round later. I think it's a great selection for the Chiefs. I knew that they wanted to come out of the draft with a safety. I think they got one of the better players at the safety position who can also play cornerback. A guy, as we've spoken about, good football player, gets it between the ears, really tested off the charts. You know, I thought the Rams probably should have taken Thornhill over Taylor Rapp. There weren't really too many safeties. Marquis Blair, a guy who's a good athlete, who's got some off-the-field issues, was taken by Seattle. I just think that the Chiefs got great value with Thornhill this deep in round two.
Now let's go to the first 10 picks of round three here. At number 65, the Cardinals took Boston College defensive end Zach Allen. 66, the Steelers took Deontay Johnson, wide receiver out of Toledo, who we've spoken about a lot on this show recently. San Francisco took Jalen Hurd, receiver out of Baylor, with the next pick. The Jets ended up grabbing Ja'Kai Polite, edge rusher out of Florida, who was a first-round pick for a while until obvious issues at the combine and throughout the pre-draft process. Josh Oliver, San Jose State tight end, went next to Jacksonville. Memphis running back Darrell Henderson went to the Rams, which is relevant with Todd Gurley's knee tendonitis. Draymond Jones, the Ohio State defensive tackle, went to Denver with the 8th pick of the 3rd round. Jermaine Pratt, linebacker out of North Carolina State, went to Cincinnati. And to round out the top of the 3rd round, the Chicago Bears traded up with the Patriots, who again trade down to select Iowa State running back David Montgomery. Now, I'll start at the top with Zach Allen. We can say whatever we want about the Kyler Murray pick, but the Cardinals did well here, just like they did well with Byron Murphy at the top of round two. Allen can play both the run and the pass. He may not be a great athlete, but he should be a productive pro and a guy who can impact the game in multiple ways. 49ers doubled down and grabbed another receiver in Jalen Hurd, former Tennessee running back, turned Baylor wideout. He has great size. He gets going quickly. Showed good skills as a receiver, despite being pretty new to the position. So there is upside here. And now San Francisco has a ton of depth at the skill positions between running back, receiver, tight end. They have a lot of weapons on that offense, so they should be pretty prolific if Jimmy Garoppolo can stay healthy. Now, obviously, the Bears moving up for David Montgomery. He's a nice pairing with Tariq Cohen. He can handle the rock on the interior. He can also pass block and contribute as a receiver. And while he's not a dynamic athlete, Cohen's the guy in that backfield that's going to provide the big plays. Montgomery will likely see a role similar to Jordan Howard, except Chicago won't be telegraphing the play call when Montgomery is in the game, since he's actually a contributor in the passing game.
I'm going to start off with Deontay Johnson. I mean, it was a surprise to many that he went this early in the draft, this early in the third round. But if you listen to our draft day podcast, I said that he was rising up draft boards and the New England Patriots liked him. And they were considering taking him late in round three, a versatile guy that can line up in the slot. You can line him up on the outside. He's an outstanding returner. I think he's a great fit for the Steelers system. I did not have him graded this highly, but there was no doubt he was moving up draft boards and the Steelers were not the only team who thought of him as a third-round pick. Then there's Jakai Polite. I mean, here's a guy that if you followed us at draftanalyst.com, follow me on Twitter, I knew that the Jets liked him, and I mentioned numerous times they brought him into the facility. He's going to be their edge rush specialist. There's a question about, you know, how heavy is Polite's playing weight. I do know that when the Jets brought him in for the official visit, he tipped the scales at about 243 pounds. Let's just hope that the off-the-field personality doesn't hurt him on the field. As we've talked about in the past, I think my concern with Polite is he's going to be a target. He could be a target for the media, could be a target for other outlets. And, you know, as we saw at the combine, he doesn't seem to react well to that. So hopefully he's able to get that together. I thought Darrell Henderson with the sixth pick of round three was a great pick for the Los Angeles Rams. They got a great backup for Todd Gurley. Henderson, in my opinion, can be a feature runner on most teams. He's terrific on the inside. He plays much faster than his 40 time, beats opponents into the open field, and then can run to daylight, picks up big yardage from the line of scrimmage, solid pass catcher of the backfield. I think he's going to be an outstanding rotational back for the Rams.
Now we'll move on to the next 10 picks of round three here, and we'll stay at the running back position to start with Florida Atlantic's Devin Singletary going to Buffalo at the 11th pick of the third round. Texas A&M tight end Jace Sternberger went next to Green Bay. The Redskins took wide receiver from Ohio State, Terry McLaurin. The Patriots finally made a pick, took Michigan edge Chase Winovich. Michael Dieter, the Wisconsin guard, went to Miami at the 15th pick of the third round. David Long, the Michigan cornerback, not the other David Long, went to the Rams at 16 in round three. Sione Takitaki out of BYU, the linebacker, guy we've talked about a lot, went to Cleveland. Will Harris, Boston College safety, went to Detroit at pick number 81. Nate Davis out of UNC Charlotte, offensive guard, went to the Titans at pick 19. And Justin Lane, cornerback out of Michigan State, went to the Steelers with the 20th pick of the third round. Buffalo's backfield is kind of crowded right now, which means they have plans for Devin Singletary based on them taking him this high. Both LeSean McCoy and Frank Gore may not be in Buffalo in 2020. And while Singletary is small and bombed his workouts, he's also watched his passing game role shrivel over the past three seasons. But he's a solid runner, good quickness, cuts well. He looks good on tape. He doesn't look like the numbers that he worked out. And he really could contribute some this season with eyes on maybe taking over the backfield in 2020. And he has a guy like LeSean McCoy and Frank Gore to learn from in that backfield. McLaurin is back with college quarterback Dwayne Haskins. Haskins pleaded pre-draft for whichever team to draft him would take one of his receivers as well. And now he's got McLaurin. We talked earlier about Deebo Samuel being the best receiver at the Senior Bowl. McLaurin was number two, separates with ease. He's a natural receiver, and he has a great chance to be a more productive pro player than he was a college player. And that depth chart in Washington really is nothing to write home about. Chase Winovich went way later than teammate Rashawn Gary, but he was the more productive player at Michigan, tested well in the pre-draft process to confirm he could hang with NFL-level athletes. It's hard to find tough, high-motor plus athletes who can rush the passer in round three, but of course, New England did just that.
I like what Green Bay did with that 12th pick, taking Jace Sternberger. I thought that was another good pick on the offensive side of the ball for them. Sternberger is a terrific pass catcher. He's got outstanding size. He's got outstanding upside. It's just a matter of him, you know, getting his feet settled in one place for a while to come. As you know, or you may not know, he bounced around from college to college, had a good year at Texas A&M, then left for the NFL. He's just got to get himself settled. He may take a little bit of time, but I think he'll do very well. I think Sione Takitaki for the Cleveland Browns was an outstanding pick. That's something that I had written about on a Brown site that I work with back in the early part of March. He's a versatile three-down guy. You can play him on the outside. You can shift him on inside when you use two linebackers. He's going to be a good special teams player. I know the Cleveland Browns are over the moon about getting Taki Taki in the middle of round three. And again, he was something, another guy that I wrote about that I predicted was going to go much earlier than people were prognosticating based on what I was hearing inside the league. I thought the Steelers made another outstanding pick, Justin Lane, with the 20th selection of round three. He's a big press, physical cover corner. I love his ball skills. I thought he was one of the more underrated cornerbacks in this year's draft. I think he's going to play nickel as a rookie. I think he can develop into a starter. I think he has an outstanding future at the next level.
Now, picks 21 to 30 in the round here. Colin Saunders, defensive tackle out of Western Illinois, went to Kansas City. Louisiana Tech edge rusher Jalen Ferguson went to Baltimore. Cahale Waring, tight end out of San Diego State, went to Houston. New England picked again, this time with the pick they got from the Bears in the David Montgomery trade. And they also chose a running back, Damian Harris, out of Alabama. Seattle took Cody Barton, Utah linebacker, with the 25th pick of the third round. The Colts took Stanford linebacker Bobby Okereke. Dallas took Connor McGovern, Penn State guard. Trey Pipkins, the Sioux Falls offensive tackle, went to the Los Angeles Chargers at number 28 in round three. The Jets traded up to get Chuma Edoga, offensive tackle out of USC, former teammate of Sam Darnold. And the Baltimore Ravens picked up Miles Boykin, Notre Dame wide receiver, at pick 93. Obviously, New England moved back with the Bears earlier, passing up Montgomery to grab extra picks. They still ended up with a good running back in Damian Harris. That backfield now is kind of crowded with Harris, Sony Michel, and James White. So it's unclear what his role will be there, but he's a power runner, good hands, decent speed, good feet. So he'll be an interesting play, depending if something happens with Sony Michel, who does have a bit of an injury history in his past. Bobby Okereke adds speed to that Colts defense. They hit with Darius Leonard in round two last year. Okereke, like Leonard, played at the Senior Bowl, should provide depth at the very least, as well as special teams ability and the upside to eventually turn into a starter. Miles Boykin was a guy who blew up the combine. The Ravens really needed some receiving help, even after drafting Marquise Brown. Boykin's a great athlete, but he's also big, and that receiver room needed some size. He may not have to play a big role early on in his career, which is good because he is a bit raw, wasn't able to be used that much in the Notre Dame offense based on the style of play that they have there with the Irish, but he's another potential playmaker for the Ravens.
I'm going to go with guys I like here. First of all, Jalen Ferguson with the 22nd pick of round three, a guy who a lot of people thought could be a late first round choice, including myself. It's ironic. He goes to Baltimore to replace Terrell Suggs, the player whose records he broke, sack records he broke in college. I think the thing with Ferguson is he's a little bit slow with his instincts. He's slow locating the ball, which I know threw up some red flags, but he's a terrific athlete who makes a lot of plays up the field. I love the Houston Texans selection of Kalale Waring. They needed a tight end. Waring's got some tremendous upside. I think Bill O'Brien will be able to develop him and really get the most from him. I think Waring will contribute as a rookie and could develop into a starter. I thought the Dallas Cowboys hit a home run with Connor McGovern from Penn State. Guy can play guard. Guy can play tackle. He's a big wide-bodied blocker. He plays smart football, fundamentally sound. You know, I don't know that offensive line was high on the list for the Cowboys, but they got a terrific player with McGovern.
Now I'll take this from pick 31 in the third round to the end of the round. Tampa Bay went back to the secondary here, taking Auburn cornerback Jamel Dean. The Giants took Old Dominion edge rusher O'Shane Zemenis. Dawson Knox, the tight end out of Mississippi, went to Buffalo. Bobby Evans, Oklahoma offensive tackle, went to the Rams. Quincy Williams, safety out of Murray State, the surprise pick to Jacksonville with the 35th pick of the round. Mike Edwards, the Kentucky safety, went to Tampa, another pick in the secondary for the Bucs. Will Greer, fifth quarterback off the board here out of West Virginia, went to Carolina, a team we had discussed with having some day two interest in a quarterback, and here we are with Will Greer. His teammate, Yadni Kajust, offensive tackle, went to New England with the following pick, and Alexander Madison closed out the third round, Boise State running back going to the Minnesota Vikings at the 102nd overall pick. Now, Jamel Dean ran a 4.31 at the combine. He's got really good size, but he also has an injury history, played just one season at Auburn, but he's flashed upside at times and was definitely worth a flyer for Tampa here late on day two. Now, Zemenis was highly regarded coming into the season, had an inconsistent 2018 campaign, but he's got some upside to be well worth this pick slot, although he's kind of a strange fit in the Giants defense. He's a little bit small for defensive end, so it'll be interesting to see what they do with him there. Maybe they just use him in sub packages. Tampa, again, Another pick in the secondary, as I mentioned, Mike Edwards, and he's a guy that we like a lot. The safety with coverage ability who can play over the slot receiver really showed that off in Mobile at the Senior Bowl. So Tampa, again, really doing a nice job with these two players and Sean Bunting earlier in the second round, adding to depth on the back end, which they needed desperately.
Yeah, I would agree with Edwards. I was so glad to see him go in the third round. People were talking about fourth, fifth round for him, and he really deserved to go in the second day. You know, you talk about teams that you thought did well. You talked about Tampa. I absolutely love what the Buffalo Bills did. Dawson Knox will be the third tight end I talk about in the third round. You know, they have a big need at the tight end position. There was talk that they were going to take TJ Hockenson with that ninth selection. They get a player who, you know, maybe he's not TJ Hockenson, but he's going to be a very good player at the next level. May take some time. There may be some bumps in the road for Dawson Knox, but he fills the need and he's got great upside. Quincy Williams of Murray State, taken by the Jacksonville Jaguars with the 35th pick. You know, I'm watching and then I see Quincy Williams' name come across the board. I believe he's a brother of Quinnen Williams. And I saw Daniel Jeremiah say, you know what? I did 400 players and I didn't do Quincy Williams. Well, you know what? I did 702 scouting reports and I didn't do Quincy Williams. So, I mean, there's always one. And Quincy Williams was that one this year. Now, my question is, I don't know what the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know, why they select them, what they're going to do with them. There's no outstanding trait. His pro day numbers, he was 5'10 and a half, 225 pounds. He ran a fast, his fastest 40 was 4.56. He did have a big vertical jump at 39 and a half inches, and he had a decent broad jump at 10 feet 4 inches, but his short shuttle was 4.41. That's nothing great for a defensive back, a strong safety, never mind even a linebacker. His three cone was 7.25, so you know, maybe I was right not doing, maybe myself and Daniel Jeremiah, you know, were right not doing a guy like Quincy Williams. I just don't see why they would take somebody like this so early. So that was kind of a head scratcher. And I'm going to mention Will Greer. I'm going to mention Will Greer because while I was off, I thought that he was rising up draft boards and he could be off the board by the middle of round two. I was absolutely right on the team that was going to select him because I thought that the Carolina Panthers would take him in round two. And as I said in on Charlotte radio, I believe it was Tuesday morning, that if he's still available for the Carolina Panthers in round three, they're going to scoop him up. And that's exactly what they did.
Now we'll get to the third day picks in just a moment here. But first, please support the Draft Analyst by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or any of the big podcast platforms. You can also find us at Bleav.com. Leave us a rating and a review. And if you have any questions you want answered on the show, tweet us at Chris Tripodi, at Tony Pauline, at Draft Analyst 1, and at Bleav Podcast to get in touch with the show. Now, we won't subject you to a pick-by-pick rundown of every player chosen on day three. You don't need to hear all 160 names. That's what the internet's for. But you're here for analysis, and we're going to give that to you. Tony, plenty of intriguing picks here at the start of the third day. Who really piques your interest near the top?
Well, you got to go with the Arizona Cardinals taking Hakeem Butler, who fell into the third day of the draft. You know, again, I kept talking about the Alan Lazard syndrome with Hakeem Butler, the bigger receiver who's got to do more at the next level than just out-jump opponents for the ball and beat them down. And I think that's what kind of bit Hakeem Butler in the rear end here. I mean, he's ran faster than many people expected at the 40, but he struggles running routes. He doesn't have soft, supple hands. So I'm not surprised he fell this far. I had him as a third-round pick. I saw him all along potentially falling into the fourth round.
Absolutely. And, you know, we both talked about Butler being kind of a loper. There are a lot of people really high on Butler, you know, have him as a first round pick. I never really saw that. Obviously, the NFL didn't really see it either. We'll see if he can kind of outpace the projection here. I'm interested. I'm going to go right to the next pick, and I'm going to look at Ryan Finley, quarterback from NC State, going to Cincinnati. Now, this is a team Andy Dalton really is not entrenched there as a starter. Ryan Finley, somewhat similar in the sense that he's not a big-armed quarterback, but he's a guy, he's a field general. He's going to lead teams down the field. He can keep an offense on schedule. He made his receivers look pretty good at NC State as well. So he's obviously being picked there to start off his career as a backup, but Andy Dalton may not be in Cincinnati that much longer. I'd be really intrigued to see if Ryan Finley ends up with that starting job next year, or if they go back to the well at quarterback, if they're not impressed by him, what he's able to do this season in a backup role.
Yeah, I got to talk about the next two picks. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, the safety defensive back from Florida, falling into the fourth round. I was constantly asked all weekend on Twitter why he was falling. And as we mentioned in our podcast, the Draft Analyst podcast leading up to the draft, there were a lot of character issues or a lot of character red flags that were raised. Gardner Johnson on the field is a terrific defensive back. He can play free safety. He can line up over the slot receiver. He can be a nickelback. I think he can even be a cornerback. This is great value just as long as he keeps his head in the game. And then there was Max Crosby from the Oakland Raiders. We've spoken about Max Crosby since we started this podcast, his entire journey about how if he wasn't going to enter the draft, he was going to be a graduate transfer. He enters the draft. He goes into a nutritional system where he puts on 20 pounds, has a great combine workout. This was a home run for the Oakland Raiders. I mean, here's a guy. You can line him up in a three-point stance on occasion. He has enough athleticism to stand up over tackle and make plays up the field or out in pursuit. I see nothing but upside with this with Max Crosby. And he's the type of guy that Mike Mayock wants to bring into the franchise. He's a tough, hard-nosed player who's athletic, and he's a leader. So this was a great pick by the Raiders.
Now, we promise we won't go right to the fifth pick of the round, but I am going to go a couple picks later, and I'm going to look at back-to-back running backs selected here with the 10th and 11th picks of the round. The Washington Redskins went with Stanford running back Bryce Love, and the Baltimore Ravens went with Oklahoma State running back Justice Hill. Now, obviously, Love is a guy who was highly regarded, considered going into the draft last year, ended up going back to Stanford, which for him really was not a good decision. He would have most likely been, at the very least, a day two pick last year, had some injury issues this year, obviously tore his ACL towards the end of the season. So he's going to be a guy that is more of a stash pick in Washington, but he's still a very, very interesting player. Darius Geis, we don't know what his future holds after he had multiple setbacks in the offseason. Washington has the depth to get by without Bryce Love this year with Darius Geis if he returns healthy, and at the very least, Adrian Peterson and Chris Thompson. But Bryce Love is a guy that if he can get back to the player that he was in 2017, even watching his 2018 film is not that impressive, but if he can get back to that 2017 talent that he was, he's going to be an impact player and a guy that they'll be very happy they got in the fourth round. I also think the Baltimore Ravens are going to be very happy with their pick of Justice Hill. He's a very, very nice fit next to Mark Ingram, who's more of a bruiser on the inside. Justice Hill is obviously an explosive player in space, can catch passes, a big play threat whenever the ball is in his hands. Baltimore is adding a lot of speed to that offense. They have Lamar Jackson at quarterback. They have Justice Hill at running back. They have Marquise Brown at wide receiver. They have some fast, fast players. They're kind of looking like the Al Davis Raiders of the old days, and they're going to be fun to watch, even if it's a run and a ground and pound type of offense.
You know, I look at the 13th pick in round four, Christian Miller going to the Carolina Panthers. At face value, I think it's a value selection because I think Christian Miller was a third round value who dropped into the fourth round because of the injuries from the national title game, which prevented him from working out for scouts before the draft. But I'm just wondering how it's a good fit for Carolina. I mean, Christian Miller is, they listed him as an edge rusher. He's more of a 3-4 outside linebacker. They took a similar player in round one with Brian Burns. You know, I like Christian Miller. I just think that they're going to waste him if they use him as a part-time player. After that, I'm going to drop all the way to the 20th selection of round four for a pick that I absolutely love, Benny Snell going to the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mentioned this as a possibility Tuesday when I did NBC Radio in Pittsburgh, and they asked me for a last day middle round running back. I said Benny Snell. We've talked about this in the past. In fact, in one of my mock drafts, I had Benny Snell going to the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I believe this the third round. I mean, this is just a perfect fit in every way. Snell is a three down back, tough ball carrying inside, can catch the ball out of the backfield, does more than what's asked of him on blocking situations. I mean, this, in my opinion, if there's such a thing as a home run in round four, the Pittsburgh Steelers got it in Benny Snell.
Yeah, we've definitely discussed Snell in the past. I remember the first time that you mentioned Snell as a potential replacement for Le'Veon Bell. My feelers went up, and I'm like, well, what about James Conner? But obviously here you have Jalen Samuels, you have James Conner there, and now you add Benny Snell. Those are three good players in the backfield. Conner proved last year that he can handle the load, but he kind of wore down a bit at the end of the season. Jalen Samuels is a really good receiver. Benny Snell is a guy who's going to really grind it out on the inside. So Pittsburgh is kind of changing their identity at running back a little bit. Instead of having that three-down do-it-all workhorse that Le'Veon Bell was, they now have several options that they can really mix and match with. The next pick that I'm going to go to a couple picks later was Rennell Wren going 23rd in the fourth round to the Cincinnati Bengals. Now, he is an explosive, three technique type of player here. Now, he's also 320 pounds, so he has the flexibility to even be used at nose tackle as well. So there's versatility with Ronnell Wren. He was a good player. He excelled at the Senior Bowl. We actually had the chance to speak with him. Very down-to-earth kid, definitely a hard worker and a guy that you want to see succeed and a guy that you really think could succeed, even if it doesn't actually show up on the stat sheet. That's a lot of what his Arizona State career was, especially at the end in 2018. He was occupying blocks, but he's also a guy who's very athletic and can make plays in the backfield. So I'm very intrigued to see what he's able to do with his NFL potential. I also am going to look at Jarrett Stidham here as the Auburn quarterback selected by the New England Patriots towards the end of round four. Now, this is a pick where you look at it and you say, Tom Brady says he's going to play another 5 years. Maybe he does. Maybe he eventually slows down. But Jarrett Stidham is the type of player who, when he goes to a team like the Patriots, you immediately have to take notice, because this is the guy with all the traits that you can want in a quarterback. He can throw the ball to the sidelines. He can throw the ball deep. The only thing he hasn't really shown is that killer instinct. He hasn't shown that ability to necessarily elevate his game at the end of games in crunch time. If there is anybody to learn about that from, as much as we hate to say it as Jet fans, it's Tom Brady. And if there's any system to be in that is going to help him improve more than the system he was in Auburn, it's the New England Patriots system. So it's very possible that if Jarrett Stidham develops into the player with the upside that we see and that we saw at the Senior Bowl and that we've seen in the past, that's going to be a situation where the Patriots could end up with their starter for the next decade whenever Tom Brady decides to move on.
Yeah, as I said, or I put on Twitter, if you follow me on Twitter, right after they select him, I said the rich get richer. I mean, Jarrett Stidham is going to be a guy that it's not just Tom Brady. It's the way they have a history of developing quarterbacks. He's either going to be a guy that takes over for Brady and is a 10-year starter, or he's going to be a guy that a year or two down the road, the New England Patriots trade for a top 45 pick, because that's what they usually do. I'm going to close out the fourth round with actually the guy that was selected right before him, and that's Ugo Amadi of Oregon. It kind of ironic that, you know, the Seahawks like bigger defensive backs, and Amadi is not a bigger defensive back, but he's very talented. He's tough against the run, fires up the field. He's got excellent ball skills. I see him listed here as a cornerback. I think he's going to be more of a nickelback safety type player that also helps out on special teams on coverage units. Very underrated. I didn't see a lot of people that had him graded. I had him rated as a fifth-round selection, and I think it was a terrific pick by the Seattle Seahawks. We'll move right into the fifth round here. Another pick by the Seahawks in round five, Ben Burkhervin, the linebacker, a little home cooking here. Doesn't have to really move too far from where he played his college football at the University of Washington. Absolutely a Seattle Seahawk type of linebacker, a guy who goes sideline to sideline, a guy who plays like his hair's on fire. He's smart. He's tough. He's also disciplined. I think this is a prospect that's going to give them early returns. And, hey, you never know. I mean, they may need something to safeguard in case they can't afford Bobby Wagner down the line. I think they will pay Bobby Wagner, but I think that pick was outstanding for the Seahawks.
I'm going to go a couple picks earlier than the Ben Burkhervin pick here, and I'm going to look at Reichwell Armstead, the Temple running back that went to Jacksonville. And the main reason this is intriguing to me is the whole Leonard Fournette situation in Jacksonville. Obviously, he got a minor parking ticket earlier this offseason, ended up getting arrested. Or sorry, it wasn't a parking ticket. I think it was driving with a suspended license. But either way, he's kind of adding up all these little ticks. And the Jags came out and they said they weren't worried about it. They weren't going to punish him. They've already voided the guarantees in his contract, though, based on what happened with him last year. So it seems like they're at the point where they're very close to being completely fed up with Leonard Fournette, despite his talent. And Reichwell Armstead is a guy, he's got feature back size. He can contribute in the passing game. He's quick. He's got good feet. He is an excellent player. And to get him here at the top of the fifth round not only fills a need for Jacksonville behind Fournette, because they do need a backup, but it gives them a player who could fill in if they end up souring on Fournette completely. He's a guy that can fill in, and he won't embarrass himself in a situation if he's asked to carry the rock 15 to 17 times a game. May not be exactly what you want him to do, but he's a player that could fill in a pinch, and when you get that in the fifth round, you have to be very happy. Speaking of players that a team would be happy to get in the fifth round, the Oakland Raiders went with Clemson wide receiver Hunter Renfro with the 11th pick of the round, and this guy's just a football player. He's not a great athlete. The production doesn't stand out like crazy, but when we talked about Jarrett Stidham not taking step forwards in crunch time in big games. Well, Hunter Renfro is the complete opposite. He was the guy that was always open no matter what time of game it was, no matter how big the stage was. He's a very, very reliable slot receiver. Obviously more of a possession guy. He's going to run a lot of underneath routes, but he's sharp. He's going to separate from linebackers. He's going to separate from slot corners, even without having elite athleticism. So I really like this pick for Oakland. It's a high floor pick, and maybe it doesn't come with a great amount of upside, but if you're going to get contributors to your depth chart, and Hunter Renfro can be that as the third or fourth receiver, you take that in the fifth round every time.
I'm going to go deeper into the round with the 18th pick when the Denver Broncos selected Justin Hollins, the outside linebacker, edge rusher from Oregon. You know, it's amazing because if you listen to this podcast, we kept talking about how Justin Hollins was outplaying his much higher-rated teammate Jalen Jelks of Oregon throughout the year, even though at points in the early in the process, people had Jelks rated as a potential first-round choice. I believe he eventually went in the seventh round. Hollins is the better athlete. He's more explosive. I think he was limited in what he can do at Oregon. I think this is a great pick for the Denver Broncos. May take some time to develop, but I think they got a guy that they can stand up over tackle at the next level as a situational player.
I'm going to go right to the next pick on the board. That's our New York Jets taking Minnesota linebacker Blake Cashman. Now, this is a guy who I made it a point to watch when I was set to go on a Minnesota radio station and talk about some of their prospects at the Combine. And when I turned on the Blake Cashman film, boy, I was impressed. I did not expect him to test out as a great athlete, but his recognition is excellent. He's very good sniffing out plays. He's a solid tackler. He's a bit small, but for me, I saw a guy who had a lot of special teams potential and could be a very good backup on the inside. Then he goes to Indy, and he tests in the 4.5s when he runs the 40. His other drills were good. I was expecting a guy that was going to run 4.65, 4.7. So when I saw that kind of athleticism for Cashman, and he plays to that speed on film, and his recognition ability is good, that makes me think this guy has more potential than his fifth-round draft selection may imply. And for me, I like that at the very least. Again, he's a special teams contributor. He's a solid backup player. But I think there's more with Blake Cashman, and I think the Jets really might have found themselves a steal there.
I'm going to jump all the way towards the end of the round, the 30th selection, DeAndre Walker. I either missed on DeAndre Walker or the rest of the league missed on DeAndre Walker, who was taken by the Tennessee Titans. That remains to be seen. I graded him as a potential second-round pick. I gushed about his game. I think he's a complete 3-4 outside linebacker. I think he's going to be a great fit for the Tennessee Titans. People say he's been classified as an edge rusher. This guy will be a 3-down player in a 3-4 alignment at outside linebacker. He does a lot more than just pin his ears back and rush up the field. He gets out into space and makes plays. He's terrific in pursuit. Again, go back and watch the SEC title game and how he played against Alabama. Just to rehash his story real quickly, he had the sports hernia surgery the day of the second practice at Senior Bowl. Really wasn't able to test for scouts. This could be a grand slam for the Tennessee Titans in round 5.
Yeah, I knew you were going to hit on Walker there. I mean, that's your guy. And to see him go this late, seems like the risk is really mitigated if teams didn't like him or they have injury concerns or whatever it may have been. He's got a lot of upside for this spot, and it's really tough to find fault in that pick. I'm going to move into the 6th round here, and I'm going to start at the very top of the 6th round, and I'm going to look at Fresno State wide receiver Keyshawn Johnson to the Arizona Cardinals. And every time that you see a new round begin and you see the Cardinals on the clock, it seems like they are making good picks. You mentioned Hakeem Butler before. Even though we were down on him, as a 4th-round pick, that's a good pick. We obviously mentioned Byron Murphy. We mentioned Zach Allen. Keyshawn Johnson is a guy, he's not a great athlete. He didn't test very well, but you watch him on film. He is always open. He runs good routes. He's got solid hands. He's a very reliable receiver. Probably not a guy who's going to succeed on the outside, but with what Arizona's done here, I mean, this year they have Larry Fitzgerald at receiver. They have Christian Kirk. They have Hakeem Butler. They have Andy Isabella. They have Keyshawn Johnson. I mean, they selected 3 rookie wide receivers, and they got good value with all of them. They're really setting up Kyler Murray to succeed as best as they can there. It's kind of surprising to me that they didn't do this with Josh Rosen last year. Obviously, they selected Christian Kirk, but the weapons were still very barren for Josh Rosen in Arizona last year. They haven't really addressed the line, which could be an issue. Kyler Murray's going to be running around back there, but he is going to have a lot of players to throw to.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, I think he's good value in the 6th round. not the greatest athlete in the world, but a real good football player. Terrific route runner, too, so it's going to fit that system. I'm going to go with the next pick, and I'll speak briefly about it. You know, Sutton Smith, you want to look for good fits. You want to look for guys that are smart, heady football players. You want to look for guys that go 100% on every single down. You want to go look at guys who get as much from their ability as possible. That's Sutton Smith. You know, I've said all along, Sutton Smith is a system player. He's got to be placed in a certain scheme because he lacks great size. Primarily came out of a three-point stance at Northern Illinois, made a lot of plays up the field. I think that's exactly what's going to happen in Pittsburgh. He's going to be a situational player who I think is also going to stand out on special teams. You know, talked about the Steelers taking Benny Snell in round four. I think they got another terrific player in round six in Sutton Smith.
Yeah, and I'm going to go a couple picks down the board here with a guy that I felt was one of the better cornerbacks at the Senior Bowl when we were down in Mobile watching him, and that's Washburn cornerback Corey Ballantyne, who the Giants took with the 7th pick of the 6th round. Now, this is a guy, he may not have tested that well, but he ran a 4.49 in the 40-yard dash. He tested as an above-average athlete, or the very worst, an average athlete, guy who was a 5th-round pick on our board. He's got solid size, 5'11", 196. He was up and down a little bit at the Senior Bowl. He came out hot on Monday, was one of our risers from the day. Wasn't as good on Tuesday, bounced back a bit Wednesday. He's just a solid player. Obviously, he's a small school corner, but he really showed that he could blend in with the NFL level of competition there. Really didn't bother him that he was a small school guy. He came in and emphatically said immediately that he was going to be a player here. He's got the size. He's got the speed. He's going to need some work. Absolutely. He's not going to be probably a top three corner on the Giants depth chart at the beginning of the season, but he's a player that could really contribute for them and a nice steal here early in the 6th round.
Going to jump all the way to the bottom half of that round when the New York Jets selected Blessin Austin with the 24th selection. It's kind of ironic. When Austin had his pro day, I posted that the Jets liked him and what round they assigned to him, and somebody on Twitter called me, said that I didn't know what the hell he was talking about. Well, maybe I had the round wrong, but I was right on about the Jets' interest in him because they selected him. I think this is kind of an iffy pick. I was never very high on Austin. Really hasn't played too much football the past 2 years. He's a guy that scouts love based off of the 2016 film, but I think when you have a guy that's had multiple surgeries on the same knee, you know, to repair, and obviously the Jets medical staff is going to know more than I do, but I just think it's a major red flag when there were other really good cornerbacks still left on the board.
Now, I'm going to go a bit further down the round as well, and I'm going to look at Washington with the 34th pick of the 6th round, taking NC State wide receiver Kelvin Harmon. Now, this is a guy who was projected as a day 2 pick. A lot of people may not have seen a lot of upside with him, especially after his combine workout where he really underwhelmed athletically. But this is a guy who wins in that big receiver game, but he's also a good route runner. Occasionally rounds off some routes here, which could be a cause for concern, but he's tough. He makes plays when he needs to make them in contested situations, on the sideline, wherever it is. While I understand why he didn't go on day 2, especially early on in the round, in the 6th round, a guy with that kind of production, a guy with that kind of size, I understand that the NFL is now getting to the point where it's more about separation and more about getting open. And Kelvin Harmon is not going to provide that. He's not a guy that's going to separate either with super sharp routes or with athleticism. But in the 6th round, to get a player like that who has produced at the level that he has and who just has that kind of ability is really surprising to me. And I think Washington, again, it's a no-risk pick, but this is a guy who could really outperform this draft pick, even if he just ends up as a solid number 3 receiver at the next level.
I'm going to go with the next selection, Ulysses Gilbert. You know, there's a theme here, and the theme is the Pittsburgh Steelers. Again, a great fit. You know, we talked about them going with Devin Bush to replace Ryan Shazier. This is another version of that. Granted, it's the 6th round, but Ulysses Gilbert is super fast. I mean, he's the guy who ran in the 4.4s during his pro day. He's a terrific player. He goes sideline to sideline. He's very explosive. I think it was just a great selection by them, and I think it's going to, again, great value for a guy who in the 6th round, don't be surprised if he makes the active roster. We're going to jump to the 7th round now, and one of my favorite picks in the 7th round is right at the top of the frame, Mike Weber going to the Dallas Cowboys, where he will back up Ezekiel Elliott, where he's going to do a good job, I believe, you know, toting the ball on occasion, which he did at Ohio State. The Cowboys were looking for depth at the running back position if you followed us or you followed my pro day reports. And this is a guy in Weber who I think is going to do a terrific job for him. I think this is another good pick by the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, I agree on the Weber pick. I mean, to get a guy like that at the top of the seventh round, I mean, he's a guy that can kind of like what I said about Jacksonville taking Rykel Armstead earlier. This is a guy who, if Ezekiel Elliott goes down, Mike Weber can come in and he can handle that position. And maybe it's 15, 17 carries a game, work him in on pass downs, whatever it is. He can play. He is a good player. And to fill their backup situation so well with the first pick of the seventh round, very good job by Dallas. I'm actually going to rewind really quickly here, go three picks back into the sixth round, and I'm going to look at Rodney Anderson, Oklahoma running back, going to Cincinnati at 39. Feels like I'm talking a lot about the Bengals picks here, just like you're talking a lot about the Steelers. Apparently, it's been a good draft in the AFC North. Now, Rodney Anderson has obvious injury concerns, really hasn't had a full season since 2017, had his issues in 2016 as well, had the injury early this year. So he hasn't been on the field that much, which is why he's available at the end of the sixth round. But this guy, at the top of his game, he's one of the best running backs in this class. And there is no risk taking him here at the end of the sixth round. Joe Mixon, while he is dynamic and he has been very good over the past 2 years, there is history with him, and it's not good. It's not pretty. And we could say the same thing about Tyreek Hill, and he had several productive seasons, seemed to have put those issues in his past, and now look at the situation he's in. He may never play another down of football again. Cincinnati is taking Rodney Anderson here, a player who, while not as talented as Joe Mixon, could easily fill in if something were to happen with Joe Mixon. Probably a better overall player than Giovanni Bernard if he, again, gets back to full strength, which is the key here. But it's also why the guy was available at the end of the sixth round, which to me makes this pick an excellent value pick for Cincinnati. Even if he never becomes anything at the NFL level, they didn't really lose that much, but they got probably a day two talent late in the sixth round.
I'm going to talk about two more guys in the middle of round seven that I thought were excellent picks. Go back to Green Bay, Ty Summers, someone who I wrote about who I thought could be a fourth round pick in the article earlier than we think. He turned out to be a seventh round pick. He's a phenomenal athlete. I mean, you watched he tested well at the combine. He tested well at pro day. He looked great in position drills. He's just got to turn that athleticism into football production big time, and he'll make it. I think this is an outstanding pick by the Packers. I think in a worst case scenario, he ends up on the practice squad. Quentin Bell, who was the 16th selection of round seven by the Oakland Raiders. I had the TV on in the background. I was watching NFL Network. They couldn't find any. They didn't have anything on Quentin Bell. Guess what? We've got a scouting report on him at draftanalyst.com. A couple interesting things at Quentin Bell. He's listed as an edge rusher, yet he's 6'3 and a half, 215 pounds, and he runs a 4.52. And yes, he was an edge rusher at Prairie View. If you watch the film, he's basically up at the line of scrimmage, often coming out of a three-point stance. I like Quentin Bell as a player. I just don't know what position he's going to play at the next level. Unless somewhere, and I have an 800-page PDF file of all the pro day workouts, and I can't find Quentin Bell on it. So unless somehow over the past 8 months he's gained some 50 pounds, I don't see how they're going to use him as an edge rusher. But you never know. They could use him as a backup strong safety. They can use him on blitzes. They can try him out on special teams. He's a real good athlete. He gets a lot of pressure up the field, but I just don't see how he's going to fit the next level.
Now I'm going to rewind a couple picks again. Seems like I just keep going backwards here, but I'm going to go with Jimmy Moreland, the cornerback out of James Madison, who went with the 13th pick of the seventh round to the Washington Redskins. Another Redskins pick here that I'm bringing up, but Jimmy Moreland is a guy similar to what I said about Corey Ballantyne, smaller level of competition, really thrived at the Shrine Game, earned himself a call-up to the Senior Bowl, and he came in and he made an immediate impact there. I mean, this is a guy who, again, is going to provide very nice secondary depth for the Redskins as a seventh-round pick, and again, no risk in this pick, a guy we had rated as a fifth-rounder, so you can look at a two-round discount here, and you can say that this is an excellent pick. He also can affect the game as a return specialist as well. He had a terrific pro day, so one of the non-combine guys that is going to end up being an impact player. He got selected in the draft here, and he's got a chance to really make it.
I'm going to go further down in that round, the 30th pick by the New Orleans Saints, Caden Ellis, the outside linebacker edge rusher from Idaho. Now, back in the middle of April, I wrote an article called Under the Radar Small School Prospects, and Caden Ellis was one of the players I mentioned, and I talked about his pro day workouts. He participated in the Idaho pro day as well as the Utah pro day. His combined marks were 4.65 seconds in the 40 with a 1.63 10-yard split, which is outstanding. He had a vertical jump of 34 and a half inches, a broad jump of 10 feet even. His shuttle times and three cone times were off the charts. He had a 4.13 short shuttle. He had a 11.14 60-yard shuttle, which was absolutely incredible. And his three cone time was 6.63 seconds. So he's an outstanding athlete who just has to develop his game. I think that, again, you know, like some of these other guys that are taken in the seventh round we're talking about, if Caden Ellis doesn't make the practice squad, doesn't make an active roster, he's absolutely destined for a practice squad. This was a terrific pick by the Saints.
Now I'm going to go right next here with the following pick, and that's the New York Giants taking Syracuse defensive tackle Chris Slayton. Now this is a guy, 6'3 and a half, 307 pounds. He's an explosive defensive tackle here. Great first step. Not the strongest in terms of his playing strength, doesn't really hold his ground, but he's a guy that, again, he's going to shoot off the line, he's going to make an impact on the inside, and he looks like he has some growth potential and the ability to improve that playing strength if he's able to do that. I mean, this is a guy who's selected two rounds later than we had him graded. If he is able to improve that playing strength and really get stronger, he's a guy who can make an impact on a rotational basis, and that's really all you can ask for from your seventh round picks.
My final guy that I'm going to talk about for the 2019 draft, as far as a guy, as someone that was selected, was the Arizona Cardinals taking Josh Myles with the 34th selection of round seven. You know, Myles is a guy who's been a favorite of mine. We gushed about him during our Shrine Game podcasts. He was outstanding during the Shrine Game. He's a bigger guy that can play tackle or guard. He's going to need a little bit of more time, a little bit of seasoning, especially to get adjusted to the next level. But he's a guy, again, I think with the weakness on the Arizona Cardinals offensive line, could make an active roster. Worst case scenario, I'm sure you'll find him on a practice squad this fall.
Now, Tony, we're done with all the players that were drafted, but every year there's always a ton of players signed after the draft. Who are your highest rated players remaining on the board after the seven rounds?
Yeah, not just high rated players, but you know, some of the bigger surprises. Emmanuel Hall, the receiver from Missouri, who was talked about in the third round. I know the New York Jets liked him. A terrific downfield threat who had some injury issues during the combine. Some people talk about his inconsistency in his hands. I don't agree with that, but he's still available. Divine Azigbo, who I gave a fifth-round grade to. I thought he should have been scooped up, one of the guys who deserved to go to the combine but did not receive an invitation. Interesting, maybe not interesting, that Tyler Romer's still out there, the kid from San Diego State. A lot of people were talking about him fourth, fifth round. He just has a host of off-the-field issues. Very talented on the field, but he's got to get his act together. Daniel Wise, the defensive tackle from Kansas. I moved him into the seventh round late. More of a three-technique guy coming off a poor senior season. He's going to have to work his way through the ranks. And then there's Tyree Jackson, the big, strong-arm quarterback from the Buffalo Bulls, who I thought made a mistake entering the draft. That turned out to be the case. Really did not distinguish himself well during the Senior Bowl. Great physical talent, but he's got to get it all together. And I can tell you this, Tyree Jackson is already signed. It's not going to go very far because the Buffalo Bills have already signed Tyree Jackson to a undrafted free agent contract.
And that's all for the 56th episode of The Draft Analysts, presented by the Believe Sports Podcast Network. Do you believe? If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe on any of the major podcast platforms and leave us a rating and a review. And feel free to ask us questions on Twitter that we'd be happy to answer on the show. As always, it was an eventful NFL draft with lots of surprises, potential steals, and possible busts. But before we sign off, we'd like to thank everybody who's listened to us throughout this draft season. We hope you've enjoyed all the information and analysis. And of course, there will be even more coming up at draftanalyst.com. So make sure to head over to the site and check us out there. And for Tony Pauline, this is Chris Tripodi, signing off.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.